It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show, and today we are taking our annual trip down Mexico Way, like the end of a Sam Peckinpah movie, to watch Triple Mania. And to join me in this resounding effort of Lucha Libre is Miss Chelsea Spolin of Shoulders Up. How are you, Mom?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, we don't cover Lucha much on this show, and I get a feeling there's probably some probably good reasons why we don't. Because none of us are real experts on it. I know a lot of Lucha history, not in a kind of like really avid way. It's just stuff I've picked up. But we feel we should have a look at Triple Mania, at least. We should probably have a look at the big CMLL shows, which is actually probably closer to our speed of what we like, because we're all New Japan fans and the CML and New Japan crossover all the time. But we thought we'd have a go at Triple Mania and see how we went on. Big show, 22,000 seaters, one of the biggest shows in North America. In fact, you know, actually bigger than All In and bigger than New Japan and Ring of Honor at Madison Square Garden, believe it or not.
Yep.
So we should give it its due respect and due diligence and give it a review. Now, we're going to do this show in two parts because we don't have time to watch it because it is about 8 days long. So,
I think when it actually aired, I think the runtime with like intermissions and commercials and stuff was like 8 hours.
Yes. You know, you joke about SummerSlam being like a month, but this was, you know, maybe this is where Vince got the idea from. God damn it, them Mexicans are going long.
Oh, God.
So, we're not even going to start at the beginning. There are two dark matches. Astralux, Dragon Bay, and Freelance defeated Aramas, Drastic Boy, and Latigo. And then there was a AAA Cruiserweight title match on the opening of the show. It was another dark match. Sammy Guevara became the new champion. He defeated ACH, Australian Suicide, and Shane Strickland. Now, the first match we're going to look at is actually the AAA World Mixed Tag Team title match. Now, AAA has been kind of mixed gender for a long while now, so it's been interesting to watch this match. And there is kind of a running theme with this particular card of, how can I put this? Right, All In this weekend has what they call an over-the-budget battle royal, because basically their mates wanted to get on the show, so they stuck them all in the battle royal. This is like that, but 4 hours long. Everyone's on this show. They hired other people in to be on this show. So, essentially, chuck enough personnel at it and it'll work was the theory. Chelsea, what did you think of this match?
So, I thought this was really fun. It was a little confusing to me trying to keep everybody straight. I definitely had to Google people just to figure out what name went with what face, but I think I kind of got it by the time I was like halfway through. I love that there's a character in Lucha called the Boy Hamburger.
Yes.
Or Hamburger Boy. That's freaking great. And I was really surprised when he and Big Mommy came out and they were faces and people loved them, because looking at their characters, if those two were wrestling in WWE, they would have been heels.
Oh, yeah.
Like, unquestionably. They would not have been characters you were supposed to like. Or maybe they would have been faces, but they would have been like, we're going to laugh at you in a mean way. And this didn't feel like that. This felt like people were just genuinely really friggin' excited about them. I thought this match was really fun. It felt like an episode of 205 Live on speed. Like, there was some stuff in this match that was just kind of like throwaway little spots where I was like screaming. Vikingo, I think that's how you say it,
Vikingo.
Yeah.
We need Alex Hernandez here now.
Yeah. he did a reverse 450 off the top rope to the floor, like he was just getting off the bus.
Yeah.
Like, just like, oh, hey, yeah, this is a thing I can do. There's like three people in this match who could do corkscrews over the top rope, and it was insane. I liked that when Mommy and Nino Hamburguesa managed to pull off a victory, I liked that Vanilla was really angry about the winner and was trying to fight people off. I don't know anything about her at all. I had never really seen her before except like one time in a clip I watched on Twitter. And as soon as she did a double knee facebreaker, I was like, oh, I like that chick. She came across as badass, and I really appreciated that. I also liked Lady Maravilla. She seems like a decent actress. Like, she did a good job of kind of, like, the spots that she was in of reacting to other people's stuff and kind of letting you know how you were supposed to feel about it, which I thought was good. I really like that intergender wrestling is just kind of not a big deal.
No.
Like, even on commentary, they didn't do that any of that she's somebody's daughter bullshit that, like, everybody does in the U.S. Like, everybody does that shit, and it's annoying. The women were just equal participants in the match and were treated as such by the commentary and by the fans. The fans didn't seem to react any differently, you know? And, I mean, that was really nice. That's refreshing, because you do get some promotions that do that stuff well in the U.S., but it's rare. And a lot of times you'll watch a really great match, and then when you listen to the commentary in the U.S., it's just terrible. So this was, and I have some issues with the commentary on the show, I should say.
Well, we'll have a chat about that in a second, I think, because we should make.
But anyway, I thought this match was a great way to start the show. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was so refreshingly different from stuff that I've watched recently that I just really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I should give you the results. I mean, Big Mammy and Nino Hamburglesa defeated Angelical, La Hydra, Dinastia, Lady Maravilla, and Helijo Vikingo Avenida. I think I got that right, and if you speak Spanish, I'm sorry.
We're really sorry. My high school Spanish was a very long time ago because I'm old, and I'll do my best, but I'm gonna fuck up somebody's name pronunciation. I'm sorry in advance.
God, no. This is the reason why we have Alex Hernandez to help us out with stuff from time to time. We probably should have, like, sent us some messages and explain. Can you please explain this entire card? But there's 400 people on it, and it'll take you a week, and you're quite busy.
Yeah, don't blame her. It's not her fault. We didn't reach out to her, and we should have.
We should have done before we started this. But yeah, it was a thoroughly entertaining match, I must say, and I echo what you said about a lot of the people in there, especially Vania and Big Mammy was awesome. You know, she's different kind of character. The one thing I like about Luchadora is it's a different kind of flow to Joshi or North American women's wrestling or European women's wrestling, and it's kind of the theme of the whole evening. I don't go into a AAA card with the same expectation of watching a New Japan card, obviously, because I know there's going to be basically no story. It's going to be a bunch of spots, and there's nothing wrong with that. There is its own psychology. It does have its own psychology, but it's difficult to kind of latch onto tangibly. And for what it was, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a bunch of entertainment, and that's what I expected, and it was really cool. We should talk about the commentary. Now, the commentary team for the English commentary was Matt Stryker on play-by-play, and Vampiro, who was trying to produce the show at the same time, which was, in hindsight, an issue. Most notably when he had to call the medics into this matchup because someone got hurt and just kind of, like, broke character to do that, which is fine, and it shows the immediacy of the problem that they had, but equally it's like having to break off every 5 minutes to go and organize stuff with Matt Stryker holding your microphone to make sure you don't say anything on live that you don't want to. Didn't make for a good flow. And you've got Jeff Jarrett sat in the back doing nout. Probably would have been useful to grab Jeff for a bit.
I mean, I don't necessarily know that I want to listen to Jeff Jarrett, but...
No, but he might stand a better chance.
Somebody else in there. If you have an event that's got 22 to 26,000 people in attendance, somewhere in there, depending on the different sources I found on Wikipedia and such, if you can rent a venue that seats that many people and stream an event like this, you have the money to get somebody really good on commentary to help with your event. And, what? You know, do that next time, because Jesus Christ, that shit was awful.
Those shortcomings aside, what did you think to Stryker and Vampiro's approach?
Honestly, I mostly thought it was awful because they spent so much time talking about themselves.
True.
And
yeah.
I hate that. Like, I get it when commentary talks about themselves because commentary is somehow part of the story. And that happens in, like, New Japan a lot of the time. Like, Rocky Romero sometimes will do commentary, and then Rocky will use his personal connections with the wrestlers that are part of his character's story to talk about stuff while he's on commentary. And that's great. You know, that helps tell the story. But I hate it when there's like, oh, let's have a debate about you and me while the wrestlers are out there busting their asses. I'm like, that's so disrespectful. And also, I watched this event with English commentary to help me as a very new viewer to this product who doesn't know a lot about Lucha. I watched it with English commentary to help me figure out what was going on. And half the time I was like, this is not helpful at all.
Part of that issue is they're talking about themselves, partly because they have a chemistry together from Lucha Underground, which is very good, and I like their commentary on Lucha Underground. Having said that, one of the reasons why they're talking about themselves is because they've got nothing else to talk about, which they should have, because there's a bunch of stuff going off in front of them that they should know. After all, one of them booked the entire show.
I think it's the second match on this card where somebody, and I feel very bad that I don't know his name, but there is a young man who does basically like a catapulting springboard over the top rope, and three or four people who are like 15 feet away from the ring have to catch him so that he doesn't die. And they didn't talk about it or mention it or react to it at all.
Yeah.
And I was offended on his behalf. I'm like, that's a big moment. And the crowd in the arena reacted to it, fortunately, which is great because he deserved it. But I was like, you know, you have wrestlers literally risking their lives to do some very dangerous, very cool looking stuff. And you just don't care about it. Like, what they should have done, I think, is gotten somebody who really, really likes this genre of wrestling and knows a lot about it. And I don't think either of these guys, I mean, maybe they're good on Lucha Underground. To be honest, I don't watch a whole lot of Lucha Underground. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was going to say, I think that's the thing for me is just that they probably should have got somebody else with Stryker. Stryker's fine. I like Stryker a lot. And especially when he's commentating on something he really enjoys. I'm not sure. I'm sure he does enjoy Lucha, but he doesn't know enough about it to make it stick.
And that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing. Is I feel like if I had watched this with any of my friends who grew up watching Lucha, any of them would have done a better job than Matt Stryker.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily saying, like, I don't know. There's so many voices on the internet right now who talk about this stuff at a very high level. I feel like if you had gotten somebody who runs one of those Lucha blogs to talk about the show while it was happening, and I don't know if that's ever a thing that promotions do, but maybe they should consider it.
Well,
because
that's what New Japan did with Chris Charlton.
Yeah. You know, I feel like get somebody who is deeply passionate about the product, because or at least the genre of wrestling that you're watching, because it's the same way that when you're watching a really good match and the crowd isn't reacting to it because they're bored or tired or whatever, it's harder to enjoy because there's just that psychological element where you can't completely divorce yourself from the part of you that is like a follower, where you want to sort of go along with the reactions other people are having. That's true. It's also really fun to listen to people who are very passionate about something explain it, and it gets your blood up. You're like, oh, I didn't understand how cool this was. This is really cool. And I wanted to have that experience, and I did watching the wrestling, but commentary, honestly, at points, I muted it, even though I wanted to have that information, because I just didn't feel like it was helping me.
It's the Jim Ross thing, isn't it? Jim Ross has often said that a wrestling match is the music, and a commentator's job is to write the lyrics. And in the ring was free jazz, and it was country music going on in commentary.
Yeah.
So that's really what we're going with, I think. Okay.
No, I'm not even going to give it the credit of the artistry of country music, because a lot of country music musicians can really play. I'm going to say maybe like 8th grade band class.
Fair enough. We'll move on then to the next match, which was a number one contender match for the AAA World Tag Team title. And as you can imagine, it wasn't going to be a straight tag team match. Oh no, it's a ladder match. Let's put that out there. And you've got Team Elite, Bandido and Flamita. Team Impact Wrestling, Andre, Andrew Everett and DJZ. Team Elite, Golden Magic and Laredo Kid. And Team AAA, Aerostar and Drago. And the winners were Bandido and Flamita. And this was thoroughly entertaining spot-festy stuff. Again, I couldn't remember an awful lot of it, to be honest. I sat and watched it all, but not a lot is sticking with me. Which is a bit of a theme with this for me, for AAA. It was good. And I love Andrew Everett and DJZ. The stuff they've done in Impact's been awesome. And I love Aerostar and Drago. They've been great on Lucha Underground and in Shikara as well. Loved all their stuff. But this just doesn't stick. And I don't know why. What do you think of it, Chelsea?
So I have a question. DJZ was the one who came out in the light-up outfit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How long has he been wearing that outfit?
About 3 years. Or variations of that theme.
Okay, because he came out and I thought, I was like, are you copying Mustafa Ali? But maybe it's the other way around.
No, yeah. He
surprised me.
DJZ's had some false starts in his career, bless his cotton socks. There was a wrestler called Jesse Sorensen, and he did a plancher. They were both young rookies on Impact going for the X Division title, and he planchered him and caught him in the head with a knee and broke his neck.
Oh, my God.
So he didn't... That wasn't the best start to his televised career in North America.
The other guy okay?
The other guy broke his neck. Sorensen broke his neck.
I mean, was he able to, like, recover?
Yes, he went and worked for Ring of Honor and had a short career after that.
And Jesus, though, that's awful.
Yeah, there was an odd story about, I think, Impact promised to pay the medical fees, and they didn't. But he left hospital early to go back to training, and they said, well, we can't. You're not really giving us the opportunity to pay your fees if you're not going to give yourself a chance to get recovered. So, yeah. There was a bunch of stuff, and basically Impact wouldn't insure him because the guys have got a broken neck, and the doctors haven't said necessarily yes. So he had that as a kind of, like, slung around his neck for a while, which I don't think was entirely his fault because it's just accidents happen. He didn't intentionally do it. And it didn't help that they painted the storyline on TV as him not caring about it. So it was kind of difficult for him to get headway after that. Then he had stomach cancer.
Oh, my God.
So he had a year off for that. And then last year, at Triple Mania, or event round Triple Mania time last year, Laredo Kid landed on his stomach with a foot stomp and essentially crushed his stomach internally. So he had another 6 months off after that.
Oh, my God.
Got back, tore his shoulder. Yeah, he's not... I've got a lot of time and patience for DJZ because he works very, very hard, and Impact Wrestling wouldn't be the same without him. And I kind of get sad when he's not used on TV because he's exceptionally good. And he works harder than anyone else. If you want to find out more about his story, he did do an Art of Wrestling with Colt Cabana, and you can have a listen to that. And the guy works incredibly hard. And Andrew Everett is another guy. He's one of those guys from... Mid-Atlantic area. He works incredibly hard. He's one of, I think he's one of the Hardy's boys, or one of the Omega crew. He was one of the youngest ones. And he works really, really hard too. Everyone in this particular match works really hard, and I kind of like them all for different reasons. The ones I do know an awful lot about, Aerostar and Drago as well, have been working their hearts out since they got kind of picked up by Lucha Underground, and which expanded their kind of repertoire of companies they could work for. So, yeah, bunch of guys doing a good job, despite incredibly bad odds against them.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was good.
I was just going to say, I love Aerostar a lot, because every time I see that guy, he does something where I'm like, that doesn't look physically possible.
I like the fact he does that springboard thing over the top rope and sticks his arms by his sides and takes a front bump with no arms. And how do you do that? Like,
I don't know. Like, every single time I see that guy, he does something where I'm like, literally, how did you do that? And Drago makes me laugh because he's a dragon. And it's funny to me that a guy is, like, dressed like a dragon in wrestling. And I like the fact that that Impact has had more luchadors on it since they did the most recent regime change. I like the fact that they have that cooperative relationship now, because when I see those guys in the product, I feel like a lot of the North American wrestlers who they have there who were, or not North American, but like the wrestlers who are from the United States who primarily work in the United States and don't spend that much time in Mexico, they put them in the ring with those guys from Mexico, and you get interesting results because it's not the same thing you watch every time.
Yeah, definitely.
And I liked seeing those two guys in particular in sort of like their home home turf.
Yeah.
In this match, because you could tell that there was stuff that they felt comfortable doing, where not that they wouldn't necessarily do that stuff in other places, but I was like, okay, I could tell that like Aerostar knows if he does that spot that that other guy's gonna catch him, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was cool. There was one other person who I thought stood out really a lot in this match. I think it was Laredo Kid, which now I feel weird saying that because I did not know about the history of DJZ.
Well, obviously it wasn't intentional that he broke DJZ's stomach. He didn't mean to.
Oh, sure. No, I mean, accidents happen in wrestling, and
yeah.
I'm not going to judge anybody. The Sunset Powerbomb off the ladder was crazy.
Yeah.
And I was surprised that they were allowed to do that. But there's a lot of breakneck stuff in this match where I was like, man, this should be a main event or semi-main event and not just a throwaway match near the top of the card, but okay.
Yeah.
I thought this was really, really fun while I was watching it. You're right, it's not super, super memorable, but I remember that I liked everybody in it and that I had a good time watching it.
Yeah. It was fun. That's what it was. You know, it did what it said on the tin, and especially with like the ladder play as well was innovative and interesting. And as Matt Stryker quite rightly said, at one point it looked like scaffolding.
Yeah,
because the creator so many different things there. But yes, it was good. Okay, we'll move on to the next match, which was a three. But again, how many people do you need in a wrestling match? Apparently, nine. Three-way nine-man tag team match. Well, this is actually for the AAA six-man tag team titles. Oh, sorry, trios titles. Get it right. Nuevo Puerto del Norte, the Powers from the North, Carter Brava Jr., Mocha Cota Jr., and Tito Santana. Not that Tito Santana, the other Tito Santana. Defeated Team AAA, Mamba Maximo and Pimpinella Escalata. That's the Exotico team. And Team Elite, Black Toro, El Hijo de la Park, and Puma King. In a thoroughly entertaining, messy nine-man match that kind of went all over the place and was fine. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And also, I kind of connect with the Exotico characters a bit more, so I kind of went and paid a bit more attention to this one, if you see what I mean. It didn't float by. They were trying to do stuff that was different. I'm unsure about the Exotico kind of thing as far as, like, respect to the LGBTQI community is concerned, but at least they were doing stuff that made me go, oh, I want to see what happens here. What did you think of this?
So this happened so fast that I felt like I almost didn't have a chance to process it. I kind of had to go back and rewatch parts of it while I was watching it to make sure that I like was following it. I think this suffered from coming after so many multi-man matches right before it.
Yeah.
I think it was just harder for me to process what was happening. I also don't know how I feel about the LGBTQ implications of
Exoticos.
Everybody on that team.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm gonna stay in my lane and not form any opinions about that, because I know that those issues relating to Mexican culture are complicated, and I don't feel like I know enough about them to be able to comment. I'm trying to remember what I liked from this match. I liked Puma and Taurus doing the tiger impression. That was kind of cool. I liked the fact that I felt like El Hijo de la Park really looked like a badass at points in this match, which was cool. I don't get why they did that whole thing on commentary saying Tito Santana, but not that Tito Santana, because I don't even know how many people watching this know who Tito Santana is to begin with.
Well, I suppose they're trying to be inclusive to all the fans as well, guys like me.
I mean, I guess that's true. I was like, I don't know who that is, but thanks. I thought this was fun, but it wasn't super, super memorable. I think the crowd really enjoyed it, though. The crowd sounded like they were excited.
Yeah, definitely. They were into it. The crowd reactions were pretty cool, actually, because normally Mexican crowds don't have a crescendo feeling to them. Like, no one builds towards the end of a match and get excited towards the finish like Japanese crowds do, or British crowds do, or American crowds do. It's just kind of like, oh, they won. Yay. It just kind of floats along.
Yeah, I mean, so this is my impression, right? At the very least, based on the people at this event, it felt like everybody wanted to like everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to like you. They want to boo the bad guys and cheer for the good guys, and they want to have the ability to bring, like, high energy to stuff. And I don't know how they managed to maintain that energy level throughout, but I think that's really impressive, and it's really refreshing, honestly. Like, a couple days before this, I watched part of a Ring of Honor show, and I don't know why I did that to myself. And oh god, just a Ring of Honor crowd when they're bored is just the worst. Like, it makes your eyes roll back in your head because it's, like, just so awful. And watching this, I was like, man, you know, it's real nice that the audience wants to have fun at this event because it makes me want to have fun too.
Kayfabe crowd. They aren't bothered about getting themselves over. They went to see, they've gone out for a Saturday night in Mexico City, and we're going to have some beers and we're going to have a good time.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I think it may also be that Lucha, my impression of Lucha, partly based on things that Alex Hernandez has told me, is that it's a respectable art form.
Yeah.
In a way where sort of like everybody grows up with, not everybody, but a lot of people grow up with like some familiarity with it, some awareness of it. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like going to the theater, maybe. Like,
yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, you treat it as like a special event, and it's cool and fun, instead of like, we're going to this thing that is so culturally subversive and we understand it better than you. So that was nice.
Also, the young ladies in the crowd did love the Powers of the North.
They really did. There was a chick pop at the end of this match. There was some screaming. I was like, did the Backstreet Boys show up?
Yes.
Like it was a lot.
You could hear the sound of underwear dropping to the floor.
And it was a bigger chick pop than when the Shield got back together on Raw last week.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
So that's saying something.
Yeah, it was. That they have got some fans. They will not be lonely, ever.
Nope.
No. Anyway, moving on. Yeah. So after this match, oh, by the way, El Hijo de la Park. I should explain him a bit because he's going to be important later on. El Hijo, as you know, is son of La Park. Okay. Now, La Park, he was wearing the skeleton costume, El Hijo de La Park. He is La Park, who you will see later on, who is La Parker. But La Parker was a AAA character, and when he left to go to CMLL for big money, AAA said, hang on, you can't take the name with you, we own that. So they gave it to another wrestler, and he became LA Park. And there was the original La Parker. And of course, when the CML runner came out, he went back to AAA and wrestled for big money against the new La Parker for the rights to the name, and he became La Parker again, and then went back to CMLL, who he still wrestles for, but they hired him just for this one match in the main event for this evening, for this particular card, in a mass versus mass match.
Oh.
Which explains how contracts in Mexico are fluid, to say the least.
So, wait, is his storyline in any way related to La Park at all?
No, because they work for different companies now.
Are they, like, storyline involved with each other?
No.
Or is it just...
He's just a dude who, I'm not sure if he's related. May not even be related. It may just been, you know, they sometimes claim relationship. He may not be his son. Might be his nephew or his cousin. Or
Same kind of,
wrestling
does that all over.
Yeah, so they just decided to point that out, because there'll be some confusion later on. After this match, I'm pretty sure it was the promo after this match, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. The faction of MAD, who have been invading AAA over the recent weeks, led by Yokonen there, and featuring Jeff Jarrett and Juventud Guerrera and Teddy Hart and Jack Evans and a few other people as well, came down to say they were invading in an NWO Bullet Club style-y. And then the cavalry came and they sorted that out. And there was a standoff between Vampiro and Conan. And they signed a loser leaves AAA contract to have a match in the future, which is obviously going to be a big match, probably built up maybe till next Triple Mania or till the next big event. Because obviously Vampiro and Conan are icons within Lucha Libre. So it should be really interesting. It was kind of difficult to pay attention to because Vampiro was trying to produce it and wasn't getting much cooperation from his production team at the same time. And if it had been, like, even if this had been in Impact Wrestling, it would have been done way cooler. But the drama of it, which was pretty cool. I liked what they did with it. They did a good job. Jeff Jarrett getting Memphis Heat in Mexico City. Some things will always work. What did you think of that particular segment, Chelsea?
So I thought it was interesting. I think the production thing distracted me a little bit, where I was kind of like, I don't know if you guys know what's supposed to be going on. I like that they're setting up for something that's going to happen after this event with, like, a really short segment instead of, like, here's a million replays of a thing that already happened. I don't know that I was 100% clear on who all of those people were in the context of AAA.
Yeah.
So I think just my lack of knowledge made it a little more confusing for me. But I did get, I'm like, those guys are invading. Those guys are going to stop them. They're going to fight. I picked up the general gist.
And this led into a lumberjack six-man tag team match. Technically, lumberjack stroke lumberjill match, because there were women there, if we're going to be technically correct. Featuring Los OGTs, Averno, Chessman, and Superfly, and they defeated Mad, Jack Evans, Juventud Guerrero, and Teddy Hart in a thoroughly enjoyable brawl. Again, far too many people thrown at every match. It's like, not because not only have you got six people in the ring, there's about 12 people outside the ring, and then there was a running as well, because we can't throw enough personnel at everything to make this work. And
everybody gets the payday.
They do. I mean, I don't know what the roster's like for AAA. There must be like 400 wrestlers on their roster. I'm pretty sure there is, and they used all of them and some more as well from other places. But it was.
Do you really think it's 400, or are you exaggerating?
I'm exaggerating. I'm probably closer to about 80, I think. But you see,
that's still a lot.
Yeah. I mean, AAA and CMLL are the two big companies in Mexico, but they're not the only companies in Mexico. Obviously, there's Crash, which is run by Conan, is another big company. There's Perros del Mal, which was a company that was founded by Perro Aguayo Jr. before he passed away. And then there are other smaller independents. Now, AAA and CMLL are not touring companies, effectively. I think I've got this right. Certainly CMLL aren't. They hire their talent out to the other smaller promotions, and they book matches during the week. So if you see a CMLL wrestler, they only wrestle for CMLL on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. That's when the TV tapings at Mexico City Arena is. And then the rest of the week, they go wrestle for other people, and then they go back. But it's kind of like the majors and the minors in baseball. So you have promoters who are affiliated to CMLL and who are affiliated to Triple H. Where did he come from?
Wow.
Triple A. It's got the guy on the brain. So they're affiliated to Triple A. So they'll spend most of the week wrestling for other promotions as the same roster, more or less. And people float back and forth and float around and then go back up to the main roster for the big shows.
Huh.
And for the TV tapings. Yeah. And then, you know, CMLL aren't spending money and risking money on tours. They did do one tour actually when New Japan came over, because they wanted to do a New Japan CMLL tour, but very rarely do they tour now, because it's cheaper and it's easier, and they can make money without, because they make money on TV deals, on pay-per-views, and on streaming. So why risk it?
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's different market.
It's interesting that they're in their market, that their primary source of revenue, it sounds like, still comes from TV contracts, but that they still seem to have this very present connection to the fans in a way that WWE does not.
Well, I mean, some of those small indie promotions will have their own championships as well and build their own stories, just use the wrestlers differently. You know, it won't be just because you've seen, I don't know, La Parca versus, trying to pick random wrestlers, so El Texano versus La Parca on one show doesn't mean you're going to see them wrestling each other on the other company show. They could be wrestling with each other, you know. So there's ways and means of doing it, and it's an interesting layout to the way things are. It's almost as if, like, they have their own indies, but the indies work in concert with the majors to make everything flow. As if all of wrestling in Mexico is doing it for the betterment of wrestling in Mexico.
Right.
Yes. Be a good idea. Okay. Really. I mean, and also there is genuine heat between Conan and Vampiro. They've been at each other's throats for about 20 years now, and it's probably not going to slow down. So they may as well figure out to win.
Oh, they really
out
don't like each other.
No,
that wasn't...
no. Conan, after was it last year? This time last year we were reviewing Triple Mania, and we was talking about the fact that Rosemary got a separate shoulder separated by Sexy Star.
Yeah.
And Conan said, "Yeah, you probably shouldn't have gone down there. You shouldn't trust him." Because he didn't trust AAA at the time, and certainly didn't trust the management team down there. So, and Conan's had an on-off relationship with AAA for the last 20, 30 years. You know, he started his own company, Promo Azteca. Well, basically when AAA had an agreement with WCW, and then Antonio Peña signed an agreement with the WWE without telling the guys who were in WCW. So they all left AAA and led by Conan and started Azteca Prima instead. Because it was like, hang on, we've got multi-thousand-dollar contracts with WCW. What are you doing negotiating our futures away to another company?
Yikes.
Yeah, so there's been many things that have gone off in AAA with Conan that he's not been happy about. But to be fair to AAA, they were the ones that made him a star. You know, back in the early 90s, he was the busiest wrestler on earth and probably earning, with inflation, more than any other wrestler on earth as well. He was wrestling seven days a week and twice on Sundays and Saturdays. You know, he's doing nine
Holy
shows a week.
Shit.
You know, because they couldn't get enough of him. He was the most over wrestler in that era. You know, he wasn't quite at El Santo levels, but he wasn't far off. You know.
Wow.
So, yeah, he was.
Santo is a god. I know that.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah.
Wow.
So he was the biggest star that they had since Santo, and they ran that train as far as they possibly could, and then turned him heel and ran it again.
Hey, why not?
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's what it's for.
Yeah. But anyway, we kind of got distracted from this match. So Los OGTs, Averno, Chessman, and Superfly. Oh, sorry, it's the next match. I haven't introduced it yet. So after that, there was this next match.
Oh, but we didn't talk about it.
Yes, we haven't talked about
it yet. We talked about it, but like...
We introduced it, and then we got off on stuff.
Yeah.
All right then. So let's rein ourselves in here. So Los OGTs, Averno, Chessman, and Superfly defeated Jack Evans, Juventud Guerrera, and Teddy Hart. Nice watching Juventud. I ain't seen Juventud in about 5 years. Last time I watched him wrestle was for the NOAH GHC Junior Heavyweight Championship, and he got his head kicked in, bless him. But this was pretty good, and it's nice to see him back again. And Jack Evans and Teddy Hart. I'm hoping for good things from Teddy Hart. Teddy Hart's not been having the best life, and he's trying to recover himself a lot better than he used to be, and he's doing a lot better job of it now. But he seems to have sorted himself out, and Jack Evans is pretty crazy and does pretty crazy things and floats around Lucha because no one else gave him a job in North America, but he seems to do okay. So he basically is mad is the Rebels. They have it's kind of Bullet Club, I suppose, really, in kind of a Mexican context. Because you look, Jeff Jarrett's another guy, kind of just floats around and does his own thing. He wants to be his own boss, and you know he's had a long association with AAA as well. So yeah, this was good though. I thought this was fun, but again, just you know, awful lot of people in this particular match.
I have one thing about it that I didn't like.
What's that?
This was supposed to be a lumberjack match.
Yes.
It did not really operate like a lumberjack match. There were people on the outside, but every time they got involved, I was surprised. And I felt like the crowd sounded like they wanted more involvement, because whenever somebody got thrown to the outside and got attacked, the crowd got really, really excited. But most of the match, it kind of didn't matter that the lumberjacks were there.
No, they're kind of like, the lumberjacks all had whips, and they whipped whoever was thrown outside of the ring, and then threw them back in the ring. But it didn't really happen an awful lot. And again, it was just like speed, wasn't it? Just too much going on, too short a period of time.
I think maybe, yeah. Is Teddy Hart, like, Hart as in the Hart family?
Yes, he is a member of the Hart family, but has a reputation for going into business for himself far too often in his early career, which pretty much blackballed him from Canada and the US.
Oh.
Yeah. Not the
That's
most
unfortunate. I thought he was really good in this match. Like, everything he did looked really solid.
Arguably, he's the most technically gifted of the Hart family outside of Owen Hart. However, brain-wise and... sensible keeping yourself options open for future endeavors, not. You know, Owen had that kind of wanderlust about him. Owen went all over the world to wrestle because he loved wrestling. And Teddy's like that. But Owen had enough ego control to understand he wasn't the be-all and end-all, and other things were going on around him, and he knew how to get people over and not just himself.
Owen was supposedly fairly humble, right? I mean, yeah. Compared to his skill level, that's what everybody says about him.
Yeah, in fact, probably could have done to have a bit more Teddy Hart about him, to be honest. But, but Teddy's phenomenal. Like, the stuff he can do is just insane. And he's got psychology down. I watched the match. It was OVE versus Scott Steiner and Teddy Hart at the Lucha Underground Impact Wrestling. And it was like, OVE bumped for them, fair enough. But, like, you know, tagging with Scott Steiner, Scott doesn't move that well anymore. So trying to make his stuff interesting and make it seem like a tag team, that's hard work. But Teddy Hart got it over and he did a good job. And it's like, if you can make that match look really, really good in that circumstance, then you can do anything. And Teddy can do anything if he wants to. It's whether he wants to or not. You know, and having the right platform. This probably wasn't the best platform for him because he can't get a lot of stuff over, but he's earning a living. Good money in AAA at the moment, so they're doing good business. So I see good things for him. But, could do with a few more breaks at the moment, and hopefully he will stay on the straight and narrow.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and obviously tagging with Juventud, who has had more issues than most wrestlers in his career, finally got fired from WCW after running naked down a hotel hallway whilst high on coke, I believe. Don't quote me on that. Allegedly.
I'm just learning all this good dirt today.
And Jack Evans has a bit of a reputation for, like, demanding more money at inopportune moments and stuff. And being a bit of a political player when he perhaps shouldn't be. But he's another one of those guys who's got a reputation. And I don't know how much of it has just been him, part of his character being that way, you know, wanting it his own way. But he has floated off from companies from time to time when perhaps he shouldn't have done. That's what this faction's about. Like, you know, these guys are disgruntled and aren't happy and got chips on their shoulders, and it matches all of those guys perfectly, because in reality, probably some of them have.
Yeah.
And quite rightly as well in some cases. So, yeah. But it works. And Chessman and Superfly and Averno were old charges of AAA. They're the old guys, the old Rudos, and they worked really well in this match. I really enjoyed it.
Superfly was really fun.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That is our first half. So we'll have a musical interlude. We'll watch the rest of the show and review the rest of it another day. Hello. And this feels a bit strange because we're starting again with the recording, and it's not like, you know, we're doing the big Troopany Show introduction. So let's just get on. So the next match we looked at was the six-man tag team street fight. Los Mercenarios, El Texano Jr., La Máscara, and Rey Escorpion defeated Joe Leider, Murder Clown, and Pagano in a pretty entertaining brawl, which was incredibly violent, as you probably would imagine it would be involving these people. Chelsea, what did you think of this?
This was a lot. I don't know how to feel about this. This is everything and the kitchen sink. There are flaming tables and some light tubes and trash cans and I think beer bottles.
Yeah.
Also, I gotta say, I love that there's a wrestler named Murder Clown. That's so on the nose that I have to respect it. There is a lot of violence in this match. There's a flaming bull rope. It's not that I didn't think it was well done. So first of all, like, that genre of wrestling is just usually not for me. Like, that's not really my thing. I could tell that the crowd really enjoyed this, but I don't know that it was a story that I could follow super well. It kind of felt like a grungy dystopian fantasy in the middle of this show that previously had been really lighthearted and fun. And the crowd still seemed to think it was, like, lighthearted and fun. It just, to me, I was kind of, I don't know, maybe put off a little bit. Everybody in this match was really good. I can tell that they all knew what they were doing. I mean, that Texano guy seems like somebody you would trust to whip you with something that was on fire. This was not my favorite match on the card. It was a little tough to watch because I kept thinking, oh god, is somebody going to get really badly hurt?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think this is the same issue that we've talked about before as far as death matches is concerned, is these guys are all really good with tons of charisma. So why are you trying so hard when you don't need to? You know, I mean, Texano I've seen on Lucha Underground a lot, and I've seen him a little bit in Impact Wrestling, but I love the guy. He's awesome. He's got a ton of charisma. Yeah. You know, he's a brilliant killer heel, top Rudos. He's awesome. And Pagano, everybody loves Pagano. And another thing is, this is a family show, and I've got Vampiro going in my ear that, you know, if you are weak of stomach, you shouldn't be watching this. But there's 5-year-old children in the front row. Think about your audience a little bit. You know, it's AAA, and to an extent, its parents should be, like, monitoring this stuff. But it is AAA. It's ECW. That's the kind of thing they've always gone for. There's always been a level of violence in the AAA, more so than in CMLL. They're the rebel company. They do this all the time. But this one was a little bit too far down the road of violence for me as far as being acceptable in a mainstream wrestling event. So, yeah. So, do you think that this is holding them back as a company, or do you think it's just something a part of their deal and that's the thing you kind of get with the package?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I don't think I know enough about Lucha or about AAA to make an educated assessment of whether or not it's holding them back overall, but I think if I was not brand new, because I mean, I am brand new to this product, but like, I think this was as strange to me as if there had been a really big hardcore match in the middle of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And if I was someone who didn't know anything about wrestling at all and was watching it for the first time, I probably wouldn't have liked it. I mean, unless, of course, you're someone who watches wrestling for the first time and really likes deathmatch wrestling. I think there are people like that. Sort of. So this is my primary criticism of this show overall, right? Is that I feel like you have these amazingly talented wrestlers. I mean, like, I was two matches into this show thinking, why the hell doesn't WWE try to sign more of these guys? Because there are so many talented people who work for this company. But I feel like they're presented in a way that almost cheapens the individual wrestler. Does that make sense? Like, I think AAA doing Triple Mania is like a big draw, obviously, because they had so many people there and the audience seemed really excited for a lot of it. But I felt like the presentation of the individual wrestler was kind of like, oh yeah, that guy can do this one thing you like, and then they kind of throw it away.
Yeah.
And I felt like that in this match, but in this match, it was especially frustrating because I was like, somebody could get really fucking badly hurt, and it's not like they're making WWE money, most of them. I mean, maybe some of those guys are, because I'm sure they're, based on the reactions they got, I'm sure they're very successful. But, you know, they probably still, like, somebody had to make a trip to the emergency room afterwards, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, there's always been violence in AAA, and there's always been violence in Lucha to an extent. It's been kind of more of a AAA thing rather than a CMLL thing. But yeah, it's good, and I think all these guys are fantastic, but I really do think they could do an awful lot more with what they've got with less violence and just make it more safer and a more acceptable product around the world, especially if they're trying to do a mainstream presence at the moment.
I think of Drew Gulak spent all that time in CZW doing all these matches where he looked like a star, but he looks like 10 times the star that he did in CZW now, when they just have him wearing a suit, cutting a promo on a microphone.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so many layers to it. There's so many variables that go into presenting a wrestler correctly, but I just watched this match and don't know that I got the impression that AAA wanted to present any of those specific guys as really important.
Yeah. But clearly they do, but they haven't figured out how to yet. The next match was Lady Shani, who defeated Fabi Apache in 12 minutes and 8 seconds in a hair versus hair match, which was by far the best technical wrestling match on this show. By a long way! This was awesome. I love this match. It went the opposite way around. It went violent to start with and broke down into a pro wrestling match. And actually, I kind of liked the way it worked. There was a kind of story there of desperation, and it did the desperate violence didn't work for either of them, so they went back to what they know best, which was technical wrestling. And as they're both exemplary technical wrestlers, it made it much more watchable from my point of view. What did you think of it, Chelsea?
I thought this was really fun. Both of those women can work, man. They pulled out some really cool stuff in this match. In particular, Fabi Apache did this, like, it was like a pile driver, I guess, but she had Lady Shani up vertically before she did it, and it looked so friggin' dangerous when she did it. Okay, than I was when there was blood and cut stuff at the beginning. I really enjoyed this. It's really nice to know that there are so many women in AAA who can really work. Because, I mean, I was impressed by the women who were in the earlier matches on the card, but clearly these two, there's a reason they gave them their own match. I think my only criticism of this is that it was a mask versus hair match, right? Or
yeah,
a hair versus hair match?
Yeah.
And
mask versus hair.
Yeah. Okay, so where they booked it on the card, it came after this big violent spectacle, and it took a while for them to get the crowd invested in them the way they should have been for something that's supposed to be a big deal like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, they did it because they're both really, really good, but I would have liked to see them have that match presented in a way that was meant to be a little more emotionally weighty, because I think that's kind of the point of the mask versus hair thing, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
That's the whole idea, is that it's high stakes. So, I mean, kudos to the two of them. They both know what they were doing. They were both able to get the crowd invested. But I felt bad for them, I guess, that it was kind of sandwiched in between some other stuff in a way that sort of implied, again, that it wasn't as important as it probably should have been.
Yeah, I can understand, because you've got a World Heavyweight Championship match on next, and you've given your main event to something else.
Right.
I think it's the problem they had of just overloading the card with stuff. And if they hadn't overloaded the card with stuff, this maybe would have banged a little bit better. I think it was kind of like a respectfully in the right place towards the end of the card, but it's difficult to make noise when you've thrown the kitchen sink at something beforehand.
Mm.
So I think maybe if it was another show, it doesn't have to be the main event. I know it'd be nice if it was the main event, but it just needs something to set it apart a bit more. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it was nice. It was a little bit of a relief to me to find out that there are big women's matches like this in on a big show like this by a major lucha promotion, because I feel like there are so many companies this size that don't do women's wrestling at a high level, even though they have the resources to do so. So seeing this was nice. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and Lady Shani and Fabi Apache are great wrestlers. You can go find their stuff on YouTube and have a look and see what they've done, and they're absolutely amazing to watch, because they both kind of approach it in a Joshi style as opposed to a lucha style, which is really interesting from my point of view, because it's a very mixed emotion set of styles and a very emotional storytelling in the lucha environment, and it hits so much harder because it's different to what everybody else is doing. Like, as we've said a lot, lucha is spot heavy. That's the nature of the beast. Well, they're not. They're storytellers, and they did things in a very different way and got a very different guttural response from the audience, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to point out, it was really nice to see the body type.
Yeah.
You know, Lady Shani and Fabi Apache are both clearly athletes, but they're also fairly regular looking. I'm not trying to criticize them when I say that. I'm saying it's kind of refreshing that there are women who can be successful in this particular genre of wrestling who don't need to look like that, you know, look like natural TV stars who are just so glamorous and gorgeous in this very particular mainstream cookie cutter way. I found that to be really refreshing, because there's not a lot of wrestling products that allow women to to look like anything other than a super hot babe that you would see, you know, on the cover of a magazine.
Well, I guess they tried that with Sexy Star, and then she left the company when they needed her most, or broke somebody's arm at the wrong time.
Yeah, I was going to say, she kind of left for, like, a good reason, because she got kicked out because she was, you know, not supposed to be there.
Not very good.
Yeah. First time, because she hurt somebody intentionally, and that sucks. You should never do that.
No, she also wasn't always great. I mean, I talked to the guys from Lucha Blog, and when I first met her, encountered her on video tape, and I was like, is she any good? And they were like, she's all right. You know, so, but, and also, yeah, she's broke somebody's arm. That's just not the thing you do. And thankfully, she is gone, and hopefully, she won't return. Off gone boxing again, I understand. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on. Let's see. Phoenix defeats Brian Cage, Jeff Jarrett, and Rich Swann for the AAA Mega Championship in an entertaining and fun match. And Jeff Jarrett, he's a force of nature, isn't he? Just keeps on ticking along. Nothing.
he's everywhere.
Nuclear war, I see two things surviving. Jeff Jarrett and Bugs.
You forgot Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman. Would still be there.
True. But Jeff's just everywhere, isn't he? Yeah, you're right. Hall of Fame ring, pulling out Memphis Heat in Mexico City in 2018 and doing everything like he did, like I saw him do 30 years ago in Memphis. Oh, well, his opponents were doing that. He was a white meat babyface. But perfectly entertaining match. And actually, Jeff Jarrett showed a good example to the guys in the hardcore match of you don't have to do that much to get over and get a reaction, because he barely did anything in this match. And it was,
yeah, but the crowd loved him.
Yeah, it was a work of genius. I have never seen anyone get so much from so little so quickly. What did you think of this?
This was really interesting. The storytelling in this match, I think, was really well done, because I felt like I knew how I was supposed to feel about all of those guys in the match. I gotta say, not super happy that Rich Swann is still getting booked on stuff, but I've sort of accepted it because that's basically, he's still out there, he's still a good wrestler, even though I'm not happy to see him. I think Brian Cage looked really good in this.
Yeah,
he's been really hitting his stride lately. Like, some of the stuff he did on Impact a couple weeks ago that I saw gifs of on Twitter, I was like, wow, that guy looks like a star. Which for a long time, it's cool seeing him sort of come into whatever this phase of his career is. Nose is freaking amazing, but doesn't get talked about in that, like, greatest out there right now conversation the way he should.
Yeah.
And I looked at him in this match and I was like, how does anybody underestimate that guy? He's so freaking good. Like, everything he does just looks perfect. I never watch him do things and think, oh, you know, that should have been done a different way to have more emotional impact. Like, I just believe everything he's doing, which is, I think, why I like him so much.
I think the problem is he's been too closely associated with Pentagon. So you notice they go to Impact Wrestling and Pentagon's the big star and Phoenix is his mate.
You know? Yeah.
And it's like, it's the Kota Kenny thing. Except with brothers. You know, it's like originally Kenny was Kota's sidekick, and now Kota kind of is Kenny's sidekick. And how does Kota get past that? And that's the story. But in real life, that happened too. Whereas here, it is Phoenix. Phoenix is absolutely awesome. And Pentagon's awesome too. But they do two different things. Pentagon wrestles nothing like Phoenix. Ever.
Right. You know, I think of Pentagon as more like a submission wrestler, and Phoenix is more of like an aerial guy.
Yeah. And Pentagon's much more of a character-based wrestler. You know, he gets by on his facial expressions and his connection with the crowd, and he doesn't have to do a ton of stuff in the wrestling ring, whereas Phoenix gets by on big spots, but he's really, really good at them, possibly the best in the world at them. And you know, he's outstanding. But you're right, I think he's a well-deserved heavyweight championship. I'm not keen on the you deserve it stuff, because you know, the company makes a decision and they make the decision for the good of the company. But in this particular case, it's something that could really lift Phoenix above and beyond. Look at the guys who've had that championship. He's just beat Jeff Jarrett for it. what a two-time mega champion who was a AAA champion for many years ago and is of a long association with the company, who in turn beat Dr. Wagner Jr. for it. So it's going to give him a much bigger lift. He's the top man in the company now, and I hope he can run with that.
I hope so, too. I would really like to see that guy get to have some of the dream matches that guys get to have when they're in that, like, elite level tier where wrestling fans just associate them with greatness. You know? Like, it would be really cool to see him get invited to have random dream matches with other guys who are at that level. Maybe that's the WWE fan in me talking, that I'm like, I want some of those dream matches. But yeah, I think that guy is an awesome person to put a title on, and I want to see more cool stuff from him, and this match was really, really fun.
I think it's kind of a shame that he's, not to knock on AAA, but if he was a CMLL wrestler, imagine what he could do in Best of Super Juniors with Hiromu and with Will Ospreay and Nice Girl and those guys.
Isn't he competing in a CMLL something coming up?
Possibly.
Am I wrong about that?
Yeah.
I thought I saw something about that on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. But yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to see him there. I mean, the CMLL and AAA guys are swapping about because that'll happen in the main event, and we'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah, this was a really interesting match. We should talk about the finish because it was probably the most creative finish on the show. When Jeff Jarrett won the championship, he defeated Dr. Wagner Jr., Conan coming out dressed as La Parca, who is a AAA official, and La Parca counted the three, and it turned out to be Conan because he was dressed as La Parca. Well, this time La Parca comes out, and it's Dr. Wagner Jr. after he's counted three on Jeff Jarrett from Phoenix to get his own back, and he gave the kid the high five, and they walked out with the championship, and Mad lost the title, which obviously was a nice big payoff. I'm wondering if it lost a little bit of resonance because it wasn't the main event, but certainly the fans there liked it and enjoyed it. What did you think of the finish?
I thought the finish was great. I had to Google why it was important in order to really understand it, especially since the match that I watched this one with the was there, but I could tell that the crowd knew what the story was.
Yeah.
And they were very excited. I think that's really cool. I do enjoy that this seems to be a product with some appreciation of its own history, and that the fans seem to be pretty knowledgeable about that. I like that.
Yeah, and I mean, also, we're something to forget this at the beginning, but the actual remains of Antonio Penna, the founder of the company, were in the front row with his family. They actually brought the ashes for the show, and that's insane and really, really cool.
Yeah.
And Mario Penna took a boot to the head in this match as well when Phoenix landed on her in the front row. Which, you know, as owners goes, for little old ladies from Mexico City, that's pretty hardcore, I think. and always very cool on Twitter, because I was talking last year, I think it was the year before, they held the World Cup of Wrestling, and our mate Roger, power tweeter Roger, who's big friends with Jazzy Gabbert, was moaning that there wasn't a German team. And Mario Penna actually replied back to us in Spanish, but she did reply back, we're always looking for new opportunities and we'll keep looking for German participants, because obviously Roger wanted alpha female to go.
Oh, sure. So, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course. So, but I think the trouble is WXW and the other German federations tend to be aligned with other companies in Europe and don't have the time to do that kind of thing. So, but it would be very cool. Anywho, we'll move on to the main event of the evening. A Máscara match featuring La Parca, Pentagon Jr., Psycho Clown, and El Hijo del Fantasma. So the rules for this was, it was a four-way cage match. The first two escapees would save their masks, and then the last two would go hammer and tongs in a mask versus mask match. Now, the first escapee was Pentagon Jr. He put a lot of decent time in. The next escapee was Psycho Clown, who came off a big main event last year, which left the emotional stuff to LA Park, not La Parca. I think I mentioned earlier in the episode that La Parca won the rights back to the La Parca name, but he actually didn't because AAA stopped him. But they invited him back for this to give him a big main event. So he's still LA Park, which is confusing, but there you go. So LA Park ended up in a fantastic match with Higio del Fantasma. And I thought it was just really, really fun. And obviously very, very emotional because Fantasma lost the mask at the end of the match in front of his son and his father, who is the commissioner of AAA. And it was just such a good film match to watch. And it's always emotional when somebody loses a match in mask in Mexico because it's such a big part of their culture. And it was really fun to watch. What did you think of this, Chelsea?
I really enjoyed this a lot. I am not super familiar with Psycho Clown or Elio del Fantasma. I know a little bit about LA Park. Obviously, I'm fairly familiar with Pentagon. All of those guys were really amazing. I was really impressed. I was a little disappointed that Pentagon got out first because I was like, that's my guy. I'm rooting for him. But also, I mean, he saved his mask, and I don't want to see him get unmasked. I hope he wears that mask forever. I don't need to know a thing about who he is under it. It's totally fine to keep that mystery there. LA Park is one of those guys who just kind of like randomly pops up in stuff that I'm not expecting to see him in when I'm watching it. And he's really good, man. He is clearly an incredibly adaptable wrestler. Fantasma, I was also really impressed by, he's Elio del Fantasma. Is, like, he the actual son of...
Yes, he is, of Fantasma. Yeah, he also is King Cuerno in Lucha Underground.
Oh, okay. That makes sense to me, because I was like, that guy's familiar. Expecting to have, like, an emotional moment when somebody lost their mask, but that was really cool. I am not sure I fully understand the whole masked identity thing in Lucha, but it's such an effective narrative device that I can grasp like the general gist of it while I'm watching it. I thought the ending where LA Park got challenged by Dr. Wagner Jr.
Yeah.
At the end for next year, I was like, that sounds really fun. Because I saw a little of the stuff that Dr. Wagner Jr. did at the last Triple Mania. And also, I mean, any guy who has a fur coat like that automatically assume that he's a badass. I was like, okay, I want to watch that. Can we do that now? I mean, you know, they want to build towards something for next year, and that's fine. I thought this was great as a main event. I thought it was really engaging. It's actually, I was kind of surprised when I realized it was like, what was it, like 15 minutes long or something like that? 20 minutes long. It felt longer, like they crammed a lot of stuff into this match, but it didn't feel overstuffed. It was kind of just right. After everybody sitting in that arena for like 8 hours, I think if it had been too much longer, they would have all been tired out.
I found it to be a lot of fun to watch, and I think as well, it had that kind of big fight feel to it. It felt like a big match. It had that WWE main event style feel to it, you know, especially kind of like a bit more like the Attitude Era kind of main event style match. And there was lots of stuff and little bits, lots of good storytelling. There were still a few bits and pieces that were kind of hurry up and wait, and there was a few other bits and pieces. Our heel referee, who played such a part earlier in the show, was back at his business again, and there was a bit of business in this with him, because obviously El Higio del Fantasma is a heel. And yeah, it was fun. It was certainly interesting. How do you feel about Rudos and Technicos referees? Because that's a bit of a AAA trait as well.
I don't love it, honestly. I can get behind it, you know. I guess if I see it done really well, it's a little frustrating to me because I would rather be focused on the wrestlers and what the wrestlers are doing than what the referee may or may not do. You know, is the referee going to cheat? I don't really care about that question. I don't, but that's my personal taste. You know, I also, again, as I've said before, I'm not super familiar with Lucha. So, it could be that there are really good applications of that as a narrative device, but not for me.
Fair enough. I can understand that. As we've got to the end of the show, I suppose the big question to ask is, would you watch it again? Because that was the purpose of this show, purpose of it going on Twitch and trying to be at a wider audience. To be fair, it was on Twitch last year as well. And I don't think it, there was, it's kind of that story of like, it's the way Wrestle Kingdom used to be, everybody got into Japanese wrestling for a week, whereas now it's they've managed to sustain it. But do you think AAA could do the same thing using this format?
Maybe. I think it's really hard to judge the overall quality and feeling of a product by their big end of year show. Because in order to put on a show like that, they always have to do some spectacle type stuff that can be easily understood by an audience that hasn't been following week to week. So, I mean, I would give it a chance for sure, because clearly there's a lot of really talented wrestlers there. I wonder if the weekly product or whatever their, I'm assuming it's weekly, it may not be, whatever their regular presentation is, I wonder if it has the same presentation issues that this did, where there was a lot of stuff that didn't feel as important as it probably should have, you know? Like, there are some tremendously talented wrestlers that work for AAA, clearly, and it would be nice to see them get treated as such.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think it's a nice platform, and it's obviously a clearly very beloved promotion, and they do good business, and I wouldn't not mind seeing more of it. I think the English commentary might be useful. I think it probably could be done better. I think Stryker would get better at it if you give him somebody to work with who wasn't having to run around all over the place. And having said that, he did a much better job on the second half of the card I watched. They did explain things a lot better. They explained that Le Parc situation, and they explained the Dr. Wagner coming out as part Le Parker situation a lot better than they did in the first half, because Vampiro wasn't running around like a headless chicken all the time. But once that settled down, I think it would be an awful lot better, especially if Stryker had a chance to look at it every week and got into the product the same way he has done with Lucha Underground. But he needs someone other than Vampiro to do it with him, so Vampiro can actually concentrate on the job he's supposed to be doing. And it's not like there isn't a plethora of people that could do to sit with them, like we talked about earlier. So I think a new commentary team would be nice. Keep Stryker, but get someone else to work with him who actually knows the product a lot better. I think it's a good platform to move on from, in the same way that New Japan have moved on with Wrestle Kingdom, and now they have a massive international fan base, and it's only taken 2 or 3 years. AAA could do the same thing, but they have to put time and effort into doing that.
Yeah.
And it costs money to do that. But again, they've got good sponsors. Look at the amount of sponsors they had for this show who helped out with production and kept the production values high. It was a really exciting show to watch in a WWE kind of explosions and fireworks and big display kind of way, really.
Yeah, and it also, it felt like the people who showed up for this, who were there, wanted to like it and wanted to enjoy themselves. And that's really helpful when you're trying to when you're trying to show everybody how cool your product is, you know? If that's what their regular fan base is like, I think if they can figure out the right way to, I don't know, the right way to expand, I guess, or the right way to display what they're already doing, then I think people will catch on.
Yeah, it's the, this is cool, you should want to be part of this kind of thing. That's the reason what they're trying to get. That's what Vince McMahon did in the 80s, you know. He wanted to, the reason why NWA shows were so dark is because they wanted to concentrate on the ring. Vince wanted to concentrate on the audience to try and encourage people to show, this is a good time, this is where your family should come and enjoy themselves. That's the reason why those lights were always up in WWE shows. It was a completely different experience because Vince was trying to showcase the actual experience. Right then, let's just wrap this up. So thank you very much for your time this week, Chelsea, because it's taken us an awful long time to watch this show. I appreciate it. You can find her at Chelsea Comics on Twitter and also at shoulders_up, where she mainly talks about wrestling. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star, and you can find the show at Troopany Show. You can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show, and on Patreon, The Troopany Show, where you can keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Please do listen to all the episodes you can find us on. Next week, we will be all in, I believe is the phrase, and we'll be looking at that show from Chicago, Illinois. 10,000 seaters. The indies can make it big. It is a very much a maturation day for indie professional wrestling in the United States of America. And look how many shows we've had in the last 3 weeks. this summer, G1 Climax Final, SummerSlam, NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, Triple Mania, all in. And it's King of Trios this weekend as well, and it's the PWG Battle of Los Angeles this weekend as well. There has never been a better time to watch pro wrestling. Oh, I forgot. There's Progress in Oberhausen, there's Fight Club Pro in London today, and I believe Attacker coming to the UK.
Stardom Grand Prix still going on.
Stardom Grand Prix still going on. Imagine this. And it's all available to you somewhere. So go watch some wrestling this week, please. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.